Armani song.
Oh, I don't know. It could be that. Wasn't there a banjo group on Lawrence Welk?
On who?
Lawrence Welk.
The Bubble Machine. Do you know who that is, Jazzy? Do we know?
Some guy named Marty.
Okay, we'll just go with some guy named Marty today.
I'll go with that, too. Do you read John Cass's column in the Chicago Tribune?
Yes.
Talented writer. The whole point of his column for years has been to get people stirred up. He's very good at what he does, the best at what he does, actually. But now he has me stirred up and is calling me out in his column as a cat lover. And you know what? Thank you very much, John. I have no problem with that. And says I'm trying to coax him into a debate on WGN. Well, okay, you can put it that way. I'll coax you into a debate if you'll be coaxed. And that makes
he
it sound...
He called you a cat lover?
Something like that, yeah, yeah.
You're an animal lover.
Yeah, but
you
implying...
You love dogs, you love cats.
I do, but implying I'm a crazy cat lover, I think. And it all has to do with this idea that outdoor cats, for which there are many everywhere in America, including the Chicago area, what do you do about them? And what I believe we do about them is trap, neuter, return. You trap as many as you can get. You spay, neuter them. If they're managed colonies and you have people watching over them, and cats outside always live in colonies, then ultimately you will trap all of them. Then they're spayed and neutered, vaccinated for rabies, good for public health as far as the vaccine goes. And then you return them back to where they came. They live out their lives, supplemented with food. They're not as likely to hunt birds that way or anything else. And he says, no, 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 they kill billions of birds in America, many billions of birds. Well, one problem with that argument, Mr. Cass, is we never had many billions of birds in America in the first place. We just don't have that many. They don't. If they killed billions, many billions of birds, then we'd have three birds outside. You know, that would be it. So they don't. In fact, their food source preference often in big cities, in the city itself, trash in garbage cans and handouts from people who give them food. But data aside, he says we should put a bounty on cats. So when he says things like that, of course, you get me stirred up. So you can read about it on my blog. That is stevedale.tv.
Welcome to Steve Dale's Pet World.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir.
If you've got pets, he's got answers.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Steve can help. We're positive.
Oh, God, this thing is going downhill fast.
You've got America's pet expert here on Steve Dale's Pet World.
Getting myself all stirred up at the beginning of the show. On top of it, Laura Monaco Torelli is here, dog trainer. We're not talking cats, but you know what? The methods that you apply and what we're talking about today, which is positive reinforcement dog training, I think can generally be applied to any animal. And you have history, Laura, with all sorts of animals. So is learning whether you are a person, whether you're a dog, whether you're a cat, whether you're a lemur, whether you're a bottlenose dolphin, does it matter?
You know what? First of all, good morning, and thank
good
you
morning.
For having me back. And I like your hat that reads "Woof," by the way.
Yes, but... and you can see us if you'd like at WGNRadio.com.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, excellent question. And you know, when it comes to learning, the theory behind learning applies no matter the species. And you know, you and I and so many of our colleagues, especially so many here based in Chicago, are advocates of positive reinforcement training. It's an effective methodology. There's effective science to back it up. We reinforce behavior that we want to see more often. And hopefully that behavior will show itself repeatedly with that reinforcement history.
Let's define this. What is positive reinforcement dog training?
Think about when we define positive reinforcement, we're adding something to the learner's environment to increase the frequency of behavior. So with dog training, we will add something like if we cue a sit and they sit, they get a click, which becomes a unique sound. That means bingo, you're going to get food. If we want to repeat the behavior of us showing up at work on time, perhaps if an employee is repeatedly late at 7 a.m., berating your employee and yelling at them is going to increase their stress level. So finding ways of creating a positive learning environment to increase the frequency of an employee coming in at 7 a.m. by using some type of a reinforcement strategy. With positive reinforcement, think of positive, the plus sign. We add something to that environment so that that behavior repeats itself.
All right, so let's talk about that. So you have a boss that isn't particularly kind and yells at everything you do wrong, as opposed to a boss who and doesn't ever compliment you for anything you do right, as opposed to a boss who says great things when you do things right and explains things when you do things wrong, or better, doesn't even give you that opportunity, if possible, to do things wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we're talking about?
You know, you are leading into such an important point where we want to set the environment up to be successful. And when we segue that into animal training, you know, it's so easy to focus on what the dog is doing wrong, what the puppy is doing wrong. And that increases frustration for the puppy, for the dog, for the family. So let's set the stage, let's set the environment up so that the puppy doesn't have the opportunity to, let's say, counter surf or, you know, counter shopping. I was joking with you earlier about it. Yeah. I like to call it counter shopping. Set the stage so that the puppy learns to go to a mat instead is an incompatible behavior. Set the stage so that the puppy has other things to do, such as playing with novel toys, not putting delicious smelling food on the counter so that curious nose will want to explore it. And setting up the owners with small success points for what they can do, because we are teaching the human element when it comes to helping dog families.
Okay, so back in the day, and even today, dog goes up on the counter. Young dog, say a puppy, because that's what you're talking about. Say 6 month, 5 month, or younger old dog, jumps up toward the counter to snatch something from the counter, whether it be food or anything else. Back in the day, and today still, there are trainers that will tell you, just say no, grab whatever it is out of the dog's mouth, which that part I endorse, especially if it's dangerous for the dog to have. And tell the dog, no, 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 no.
Well, you kind of startled me there a little bit.
Well, okay, so maybe it works.
Yeah, well, it works, but at what cost? And the cost is the relationship. So when we look at learning by association, then if we are approaching the puppy or dog and yelling or physically grabbing the collar and pulling them back, we are now affecting the learned association between the owner approaching the puppy, therefore something aversive or punishing is going to happen. And now the puppy might learn to fear the approach of the owner. So our job is to help look at what do we want instead, and not at the cost of a stressful relationship that's learned through that association when we use aversives or punishment.
I think what you're teaching the dog there is everything you said, you know, maybe, in fact, likely impacting the relationship the dog has with the owner. But moreover, what you're teaching the dog is don't counter surf when the other person's around. But when people aren't around, what the heck? Go up there.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what? Another excellent point, because most puppy or dog owners might not think they'll leave for work, but they'll let the dog have access to the kitchen counter. So, you know, I always say, you know, a picture is worth 1,000 words, but video is worth 1,000,000. Can you get video of what's happening when you're not home?
Mm-hmm.
So we can see the very scenario that you just brought up. What's happening when that person or, you know, when the owner isn't around or when the puppy or dog is left alone.
Oh, and now we can do that, can't we?
You know, it's
so
wonderful.
I did that with our dogs. I didn't know we subscribed to HBO until I saw a video of our cat and dogs watching a movie they should never watch. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 if you have questions for the amazing Laura Monaco Torelli. She speaks about all this stuff all over the world.
Yes.
And has worked from the zoo and aquarium world, is now working in the world of companion animals. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. And I want to talk more when we come back about what dog trainers could be doing today and should be doing philosophically, and what you should look for when you choose a dog trainer. including this whole concept of board and train. Our phone number again, 312-981-7200. You can text us at that same number. Laura Monaco Torelli is in the studio with us, WGN Radio, 10 minutes before 7 o'clock. I'm Steve Dale, who is reading a text. You can call us, 312-981-7200, or text us. I have a bunch of text here. Fresh Wave is a must-have for the cat box area that I love. I love that text. That's true. I agree with that. Another, I've trained two cats starting in their middle age. I've trained them to beg for their meals. I say horsey, and they go up on their hind legs.
That's really cute.
I love that.
That's really cute.
And a question via text. When do you begin training your dog? How old is too young or too old?
Oh, that's wonderful. So
I don't think there's a too old. So if you adopt a 10-year-old dog, it's okay to
you
go.
You know, we always hear the saying, you know, can old dogs learn new tricks? But yes, and it's also important that as our dogs age, bless them, and they get into their geriatric years, that training is a form of mental enrichment. It helps keep them active mentally on top of what we can complement with their exercise program that meets their health guidelines. But a dog is never too old to train. It's so good for their mental health and physical stimulation as well. Too young, you know, some puppies, it all depends at what age they come out of the litter. If it's from a reputable breeder, they do a great job of integrating training as soon as those puppies are born to help set the stage for behavior vaccinations, so to speak. We always hear about veterinary vaccinations, but there's also behavior vaccinations.
I love the way you put that. That's true.
I'm sure I borrowed that statement somewhere. But when we sign teams up for our Puppy Start Right series, what we require is proof of start of the vaccination series, mm-hmm. not completion. We want to see that the puppy has gotten a full vet wellness checkup. They've started the required vaccination series. They have a negative fecal panel. And get them in that puppy class versus waiting till they're 5 or 6 months when the vaccinations are complete.
Right. So once you get, I think the data is about this. Once you get two of the parvo vaccines in you, at the end of the day, talk to your veterinarian. You'd agree with that.
Yeah,
but once you get two parvo vaccines into the dog is nearly, not quite, but nearly 90%, not 100%, but nearly 90% protected. The risk of getting parvo at that point is minimal. The risk of ultimately years later the dog dying as a result of behavior problems is not so minimal.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know that also brings up a great point of the American Veterinary Society for Animal Behavior has great position statements on their website.
Yes.
And one of them is about puppy socialization. So that's a great question from one of your readers or texters.
Yeah.
Listeners, thank you. To visit the American Veterinary Society for Animal Behavior's website, they have great position statements there.
AVSABonline.org. I had two callers there. Jasmine, they're both gone. I lost them. I don't know what happened. Not your fault. I know. Who knew? I just pressed the button and each one, poof. They disappeared. It's magic. One thing I wanted to ask you about, and we have a texter wanting me to ask you about as well, is board and train. You know, where you send the dog off to camp, so to speak, and you get the dog back X number of weeks later. Is that a good idea?
Another excellent question. Thank you for your listener for sending in that question. I advocate carefully researching your trainer first. I know plenty of wonderful positive reinforcement trainers out there that have wonderful board and train programs under certain contingencies. So meaning that the family has to meet with them X amount of times, you know, during the board and train. Board and train can also be defined as the trainer coming into the client's home and doing the training in the client's home environment, contingent on the client agreeing to meet with that trainer at least once a week. But they are integrating, you know, clicker training or lure reward training, treat-based training, that makes a big difference. So I'm not an all or nothing about board and train, but let's look at what it is defined as and who they are researching as a trainer and do your reconnaissance. As a new puppy or dog owner, do your due diligence. And any certified professional trainer that is willing to take the time to answer your questions – that's going to lead you down the path of feeling comfortable to ask, you know, what will the trainer do if their puppy or dog offers something, quote, wrong? What is their philosophy when it comes to training? Do they use food for reinforcement? What type of equipment do they advocate? Whether, you know, do they use shock collars? Do they use correction collars?
Is there any reason to use a shock collar on a puppy? And we're talking about, we should define it, one of those collars you put around the dog's neck that gives the dog a shock.
Yeah, yeah. With a puppy, well, for any dog, I would not reach for a shock collar. That would not be my choice.
Do you ever use one?
I have never used a shock collar, no.
And you've been doing this how many years?
Professional training for 25 years
and
now.
And you're undoubtedly one of the best in the country. And you just said
you
never.
You're very nice. You're very nice to
well,
say
Well, you
that.
Are, but you just said never.
Yeah, well.
There's a message there, I think.
You know, it's continuing as professional trainers to do our research, to continue with our certifications, and to learn more about the science behind learning. And if I have someone approach me that says, I want to use a shock collar on my puppy, but I'd like you to be my trainer, I like to take the time on the front end to find out what behaviors are they seeing being offered that they are reaching for the shock collar. It's not that the puppy or dog owners are doing anything wrong. They just don't know anything different. Now, I do want to compliment to this thought. I do have clients that use a shock collar. Then they reached out to me to help with training. And I ask them, are you open to segueing the shock collar out of your daily repertoire while we're building a reinforcement history, a nice thick bank account of a lot of good deposits of reinforcement? And then we can segue off of the shock collar. I don't want to turn them away right away because they are looking to change. They are looking to learn about something new. And if I say, oh, well, you know, you have a pinch collar on your dog, I'm not the trainer for you, I'll say, you know, good for you for wanting to learn more. I'm excited to teach you. And if you want to segue off of using a correction collar, I'm more than happy to be a part of that process.
Do you ever get mad?
I am half Italian, but yes, I've been told that temper can come out.
I've never seen that. You know?